everybody, and welcome to episode 1 of season 5 of the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White, and with me today are the John Stockton and Carl Malone of board game podcasting. It's Bob Kroll and Ryan Gutowski. Hello, gentlemen.
Look, so which one's now, which?
Based on height alone, I'm going to say you're Carl Malone and I'm John Stockton.
That's what I was
although
thinking.
They would rename me John Stocky if it was.
I like that. I like it a lot. Thank you, Bob. Yep, I am the mailman because I'm putting games in boxes.
Wow.
And then shipping them off. Because
yes, thank you for making it a logistical joke. That's what really people love and they're looking for.
People like it if you explain the joke.
Yeah,
that's
yes,
what I hear.
They like it. Guys, it has been a summer break.
It has
epic
been.
Epic proportions.
We've been to cons.
Yeah.
He almost became cons.
That got rough. That got rough there for a minute.
It did. Yeah. It did. So
that story only available for Patreon supporters.
Patreon supporters, subscribe. If you want to be, you want to hear about how Ryan almost got arrested over state lines, become a Patreon donor right now.
If you'd like to hear Ryan talk about rental properties, get on our Patreon.
Yes.
Our
Patreon just turns into a quick make money scheme. So
yeah,
it's going to be really good. You want to know how to make money? Give us some.
So we went to a bunch of cons, and we're going to spend this episode talking about Southern Fried Gaming Expo.
Yeah.
Which was a big thing for all of us. But, you know, before that, we always like to start the episodes with, what have you been playing? So, Ryan, what have you been playing?
What have I been playing? I've been playing all kinds of games, Rick White.
As you should.
I've been playing a lot of games. But let me tell you about the Colors of Paris. Da, da, da,
da. I was thinking you were about to say Colors of the Wind, and you were going to reference Pocahontas, and I got excited, but now I'm disappointed.
Oh.
Was that the Colors of the Paris
This
song?
Is actually the European Pocahontas.
The European Pocahontas version.
Yes.
Colors of Paris. Pocahontas.
Colors of Paris.
That sounds awful.
Yes. It's a Pixar movie. No. Colors of Paris is a game about painting. It is really cool. This game takes place in the Renaissance of art in Paris, and you are, I think the storyline is that you are a painter in this amazing studio place in Paris, and you are trying to paint these beautiful paintings. The game is basically worker placement with a rondelle in the middle of the board, and players are given three little painting meeples in the beginning, along with one of each primary color. So you got a blue, red, and yellow color pigment, and you're using these to using your little painter to get additional colors, and you're painting on cards that you recruit from these easels. I really like the setup of this game. It's tough to quantify exactly where it fits in the spectrum of art games, because you've got something like Bob Ross, The Art of Chill, which we all really enjoy, but it's a really chill game. There's a little bit of strategy there. You're kind of painting. It's just real casual. But then you've got something like Starving Artist, which it's not difficult, but you always feel that pull of like, I've got to make enough to feed myself, and I also need to get these paintings done. But then you've got Colors of Paris, and Colors of Paris does a really good job of just smoothing out this whole process of making these paintings. The first person at the table who paints two paintings ends the game. And you're getting points for each painting that you make. They've got a point value. So some of the colors, some of the paintings that use your secondary colors and mixtures of colors and things like that will be a little more, earn you a little more victory points. But you can also do things like use your secondary colors to make black pigment, which will gain you 6 victory points at the end of the game. The black pigment's not good for anything else. You can also upgrade like your brush, and you can upgrade your mixing skills and your squeezing skills.
That part's a little weird.
Yeah, you can squeeze tubes better. So I don't know. Anyway, It's a little odd, but that's okay.
It works.
Because the
it
game,
works thematically,
yeah, it works.
It works. Yeah.
It's a really
it's
great
just
game.
Funny to laugh
and
at.
So it is. It is. I got super squeezing powers.
Yeah. We say that about Carl Malone.
They do. They do. He's always talking about his squeezing powers. And mailing. And mailing. So anyway, Bob and myself and my sister-in-law, Lauren, she actually played on a live stream with us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com/oneboardfamily, and you can check out a full playthrough of Colors of Paris. We're going to be releasing, if we haven't already, we're going to be releasing a full review of Colors of Paris this month. It is a really good game, guys. I am very impressed with it, and I am very happy that this is in our collection. It fits right there with one of those medium weight games that if I've got some friends who are gamers over or another family of gamers, this one's coming to the table.
Yeah.
Really enjoying it. So.
And if you don't head over and watch that live video on our Facebook page, just know that I won. So it's, that's what's important.
That's what losers say.
Yeah.
Right. Just let me have this, man.
Yeah.
Just let me have it.
Yeah. We played it, at Origins. I like the center rondelle is one of my favorite parts where you get to kind of impact, whether or not the wheel rotates or how much it rotates.
That's fun.
And get to copy people's actions and stuff like that. It really becomes almost a little cutthroat towards the end of the game because you start to realize what other people want to do to do, and you set yourself up to make sure you can block them, but you also need to try to make sure you get your actions and stuff like that. It becomes pretty tough.
In that playthrough we did, that's exactly like to a T what happened. I looked over at Ryan and he was laughing at me for getting so far behind in my paint storage and how they can produce and mix so many colors. And I said, okay, fine. I'll control the board. So I started, so I knew what they needed to do. And I just kept taking, nobody wanted to go and take the first player or the control board spot. So I just kept taking those spots and stopping Ryan from being able to do what he wanted to do. And, so that was fun.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a really good game, and I think that it is the right weight painting game for me. As an artist, I really like these type of games, and I think it's the one that connects with me the most because it's not too simple. It's not incredibly heavy. I love The Gallerist. Okay, that's a game about curating an art exhibit. I love The Gallerist.
Yes, it's very good.
I can,
but you're not teaching that to someone who
never.
Yeah, you're not teaching that to a family member whose weight is Ticket to Ride.
Yeah,
you know.
I would tell you that if I owned The Gallerist, it would sit on my shelf forever collecting dust because I don't think anybody – you would play it with me, but I don't think I could get anybody else to play that depth of game and sit there for 2 to 3 hours. While I love it, I think that Colors of Paris is more the speed that I'm going to be able to get Colors of Paris on the table, twice a week, with no problem. Yeah. So.
Awesome. Bob, tell us what you've been playing, sir.
Coincidentally enough, right along with Ryan's art theme, I've been playing an art game. And this has been going over very well with my Meeples group here in town. And I think we've got about 4 plays in the last week. So that's pretty good. And it is Belrotti. It is...
Spell it for the audience.
I'm going to spell it for the audience. It's
do it.
B-E-L-A-R.
Mm-hmm.
Wait. Hold on. B-E-L-R-A-T-T-I.
Uh-huh. I mean, really, I'm asking you to spell it
so I can
Google
it. Yeah, it might be Belrotti. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You know what? As long as you're not using an Italian accent, that's what we're going for.
Is it I got it from Germany. So I imported it because based on some conversations we had in a forum, it may have been Discord, it may have been Facebook, I'm not really sure, but I got some recommendations. So I went ahead and I bought that with a bunch of other games, and it was a huge surprise. And Belrati, the best way I can explain Belrati is it is a combination of Dixit and Mysterium smashed together. So, what you're doing in this game is there are, depending on how many players there are a set of curators and there are a set of painters. In the game, the curators are cats with some very funky looking, cool, quirky, unique artwork. I think that's one of the things I like about the game. And the painters are owls, like, you know, the birds. And what you're doing here is you are trying to, the curators are asking the painters, whoever the takes on the painter roles. So, for instance, let's talk about a five-player game. In a five-player game, you're going to have three curator roles, and you're going to have two painter roles, okay? The curators ask the painters for a certain number of paints, or a certain number of paintings that they want to go into their museum or their art gallery that they're about to make. The curators must decide between 2 and 7 paintings. Once they decide on that number collectively, they say to the painters, okay, we need 3 paintings. Between all the painters, we need you to submit 3 paintings. Now, they're going to submit paintings based off of there's a deck of, oh man, there must be 150 or 200 different painting cards. They all have different objects, like shopping carts, to planets, to pieces of birthday cake, to glasses of wine. Any object you can think of is on these painting, these cards, painted. And 2 cards are going to roll out of the deck. And say, for instance, it's a baby chicken and a birthday cake. The curators are going to say to the painters, we want you to submit 3 paintings to go in either of these 2 galleries. Those paintings...
I've always been looking for things to add to my baby chicken gallery, so I'm glad that this game exactly, is going to allow me to do that.
So what's going to happen is the curators are going to... or the painters are going to talk amongst themselves, but they cannot give any information to each other about the paintings that they have in their hands. Every person on the table, depending on the number of players in the game, is going to have a set number of cards. I believe in a 5-player game, you have 9 cards drawn out of the deck into your hand. So as a painter, you're going to look at your 9 cards. You're going to look at the paintings that are on the board, the 2 paintings that are in the gallery. And then you're going to talk to the other painter. And you're going to say, okay, I have 1 painting that works really well. Like, it's a really good painting. That's all you can say. You can't say what it is. You can't say what gallery it goes into. But you can talk like that about the paintings. So you can say, I have 2 paintings that are meh, like they're okay. And then the other painter can be like, well, don't worry about it because they asked for 3. And I have 3 paintings that are perfect for these galleries. So then once the painters decide what they're going to submit, they put the paintings in face down, and then you are doing all of this against the game itself. The game itself is Belrati. He's a rat. And he is trying to sneak in fake paintings into the gallery. So
is this kind of like Ratatouille, that Remy... that rat from Ratatouille, is this like his cousin?
Yeah, it's his cousin. He's not as nice.
Is this like his cousin? He's like...
Yeah, he...
Oh, man, this is some real jerk crap.
It is. He's a horrible rat.
He's got a mustache,
yes,
doesn't he?
Yes, he does. I believe he does.
Does he have a mustache?
He does have a mustache.
Yeah, figures. Yeah.
Most rats have mustaches. So
yeah, especially evil rats.
I think that's it.
I've never met an evil rat without a mustache.
Evil rats. Yeah. Mustaches, evil rats.
Man...
Yeah. Oof. But what's
if I meet this rat in an alley? He's
and
done.
He is actually a jerk, because more often than not, what's going to happen is the painters submit their paintings face down. The Belrati always submits 4 random face down paintings off the top of the deck, in with the painter's paintings. So if we submitted 3 paintings as the painters, he's going to submit 4. They get shuffled up and then turned face up. The curators have no idea what the painters have submitted to the gallery and why or why they have submitted it to the gallery. Then it is the curator's job to deliberate and decide which paintings go to which gallery and which ones should not go in the gallery. And the painters cannot say a word. They just sit there. So, say me being the painter, said I had perfect paintings, okay? Maybe I had a beach ball that was just bright yellow. And I submitted it because the chicken was yellow. And I'm like, man, I hope they're going off of color here. Maybe they'll think of that, you know? Maybe I submitted also a painting of a fork and a knife. You know? I wanted that to go into the little chicken gallery, too. That's kind of funny, you know? I'm going to eat the little bird. You know, it's chicken.
Yeah, that's horrible. You're awful.
Okay, so those are the things. So the reason I say this is like Dixit Mysterium is it's completely, like abstract thinking, like, outside the box. I have no idea how your mind works. It's going to work with my mind. Are you going to be thinking the same level that I'm thinking? Like, you have to...
I hope not, but Bob's brain is a dangerous place
for
to
eating,
be.
What, for eating like a baby chicken? It's probably delicious.
No, I mean, just in a general place, I'm scared of it.
Just
it's
in
like,
general.
It's like
yeah.
veal.
Yeah.
You know, baby cow, baby chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But anyway, so what you're doing here is you're actually playing against the game. So the whole thing is a co-op. And those roles... each time will switch, so they will rotate around the table. So people get to play curators, and people get to play painters, and it keeps going around and around in clockwise order. But what you're doing is you are trying to get as many paintings as you can each time into the gallery without the rat getting any in. If the Belrati is able to get 6 paintings into the gallery, the game is over. And there are levels of paintings. So like 0 to 9 into the gallery, you're like a horrible painter. Like, why even bother? Get out of the business. And then it goes from there, like 10 to 15, 15 to 20, and so forth.
You can't paint because you don't know how to discern what a rat secretly threw into
exactly.
your
head. And the funniest thing about this game as a painter, you have like the perfect like paintings that you're submitting. And you're like, man, these are so good. If these guys don't get this. And then they turn over the paintings and the rat has put in a painting that works even better than your perfect painting mm-hmm. that you put in. The coincidence of that happening in this game is just so crazy that it just adds so much tension. And I enjoy that tension, but I see it in some people's eyes, like sitting there as the painters and watching the curators deliberate and make logic and theory as to why this card goes into this gallery, and then watching them like hash that out amongst themselves, and you're sitting there like, that's none of that is true. What are you guys doing? You know? So
yeah, I think if I got beat by randomness, I think I'd go crazy. I think I'd be like, how did the egg show up in the random cards? I think I'd probably burn the card.
I mean,
probably what I would do.
It happens, you know? And like I said, the better you know these people that you play with, and the same thing happens with Dixit, mm-hmm. too. The better you know the mm-hmm. people that you're playing with, the better you know how they think, you know? So if I'm playing with Ryan, I'm like, oh, Ryan would never do that. Like, that's not a card Ryan would put in for me to associate with that. You know what I mean? So, but yeah. I it's really good. I have it with me. Ryan, we need to play it. Like, I mean, I'm talking like absolutely need to play it. That is a game I need to bring over and sit you down with Aaron, the girls, and Josiah, all of them. We need to get together and we need to...
They would like
it. We definitely need to play that. And I think Repos...
So this is... So this is coming to America.
Yeah.
Pretty
so
soon.
So from what
and
I
Murphy?
Gathered, Repos took over the printing of the game, and I think there's some talk about Asmodee and them bringing it over, and I think they're either, I don't know whether or not they're releasing new artwork to push the game out of Essen, or they are releasing the game as is and just reboxing it and releasing it at Essen. But it is coming. You can get it now if you would like to. You can go on Amazon.de and get it from Germany if you want to, which is what I did.
Yeah.
But you know how I do with games, so.
That's cool. Awesome. Rick, what do you have? What have you been playing?
What have I been playing? I got to play Tricky Tides from Gold Seal Games.
Yeah, yeah.
Andrew Smith, we know that fella. Got to pick up a copy at Origins, and I've played it a couple of times. Mondo came over and played it a couple days ago with me, and it's really fun. Basically, at its core, it's a basic resource movement game. You travel to islands, pick up goods, and then travel to other islands to drop them off to get points. But it's got some twists to it where you get special bonus points for certain types of shipments that you get that are identified by different monsters. And speaking of monsters, the game also has four different monsters that are that can impact your gameplay. So, like, the dragon can... or I think the whale shoots out three goods in a row on three different islands, and the shark eats goods on an island, and the octopus will move goods around. So there's different things that these little monsters can do. Movement is determined by cards, and so the cards fit into, like, suits. So there's cards numbered 1 through 8. Each of the cards has a compass in the center, and different points on the compass are highlighted with a color. And the number of different directions you can travel is shown by the number on the card. So, like, you have more travel options if you play an 8. But also it kind of follows like a trick taking game. So the first player places down a card, and if you can match the suit of that card, you have to, and then, order is determined, play order is determined by what you, put down. It's really a lot of fun. I like the slight twists on the game. Like, it presents itself as a very straightforward, like, pick up resources, drop off resources game. And then these little twists make it really fun. The best part of it to me is the artwork. It's just kind of got this, like, you know those maps that say, like, here there be dragons and stuff like that? It's kind of got that kind of artwork to it. So
cool.
It's really cool, and for all of you, you know, listening to a podcast, I love talking about visual elements of a game, and so, yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I've had fun with it every time. I think it was, I preferred it at a higher player count. Mondo and I played it two-player. When you play two-player, it flips over some of the islands to just be open sea, so you have fewer options for travel,
mm-hmm.
And... the monsters cannot be on open sea, so it kind of just gets a little crowded when there was only two people. So I preferred it at a higher player count, but it was still fun. Like, we still had a good time with it.
Trick taking.
So it's definitely one that I think people should take out, check out.
I love trick taking.
Yeah, you love trick taking
so
games.
Much.
This is this sounds like one you're gonna have.
Yeah,
to
I'm definitely gonna have to add this to my collection.
That's cool. Awesome. It sounds like we played some really good games lately.
Yeah, we did.
Man. Okay. Well, that'll do it for what we've been playing. We're coming back at you after this break. We're going to be talking all about Southern Fried Gaming Expo. We'll see you on the other side of this music. Right, we are back, and we are talking about Southern Fried Gaming Expo. Rick, this is a game convention in Atlanta, Georgia, that came up on your radar last year, and when you came back from it, you told me, you said, this is the convention that you need to bring Josiah to. And so, here in the fake studio that I call my bedroom, I've got Josiah with me. Say what's up?
Best entrance ever.
There we go. So Josiah's with me, and we're going to be talking about Southern Fried Gaming Expo. Rick, give us the rundown.
Yeah, Southern Fried Gaming Expo is a gaming expo, but is not fried, because that would make for a very interesting experience.
Be real greasy.
Yeah, it's got board games, it's got arcade games, it's got pinball games. It hasn't been going all that long. I don't know.
This was their sixth year, I believe.
There you go.
And it was Kickstarter funded originally.
Sweet. And so, yeah, I was able to get a day pass last year. Sarah got me a hookup through some people she knew through World Relief, and then had a great time. Knew we needed to go back, and it's great, and it's really, to me, it's kind of like if Atlanta Game Fest got souped up with, you know, some extra stuff. Mm-hmm. It's got that chill kind of atmosphere. Like, Origins is great, and, you know, we have a great time at Origins.
Definitely.
But, like, there's definitely a lot more chill involved at Southern Fried, and I really
Southern Fried, that. Yeah, Southern Fried never felt like we were working on anything. It felt like we were just having a great time. And honestly, the atmosphere at Southern Fried, it feels like people just coming together and getting to know each other, deepening relationships. It never felt like a convention. It felt like an awesome weekend.
It did. So. Even though there were actual exhibitors there, Chad from 25th Century was there. Andrew from Gold Seal, who we talked about earlier, he was there. So there were a bunch of exhibitors that were actually there, but it still felt like way less work and more just hang out and play. I've met a lot of new people at Southern Fried, a couple of new in the industry, a couple of media people from the industry, as well as people who were local in Atlanta and people who came in from like across the country to come to this convention. I sat down with a couple of guys 2 days in a row, and they taught me things like Res Arcana. I played Res Arcana for the first time, which was absolutely a phenomenal game. And it's just, yeah, like you said, Ryan and Rick, it's just really chill. It felt like it was we were there, even though we were there as one board family together, it felt like more of a party than, like, you know
party.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It did, what about you, Josiah? Josiah, was it the greatest?
It was like the best place on earth. Kidding. It was really good. I liked it.
So, Josiah, you're 14 years old, and you're not a huge board gamer. You enjoy video games a little more, wouldn't you say?
Yeah,
okay. So tell me about your experience. Like, what did you get out of the experience?
Well, I liked playing a few of the arcade games, and I hadn't really played real pinball before this, and it was really fun. I really liked it because there was a lot of it.
Yeah, there were a ton of pinball machines. I think they had 150 different pinball machines, and that pinball is awesome.
There were so many pinball machines. That's probably the most pinball machines I've ever seen collectively in one spot.
Yeah. So
And until last year, like, it had been probably 10 years since I'd played a pinball machine, and they have gotten a little more advanced.
Oh, yeah.
In that time, they were, you know, all kinds of video graphics, and, you know, they have straight digital ones now.
Yep.
But they also had some more classic pinball machines. It was, I found myself for like 45 minutes at this like NBA Jam kind of themed one that was from the 90s, and it had like in the top part, it had a separate little flipper that you would shoot a ball into a basket on, and it was pretty awesome. But, it had tons of
pinball. Now, let me just clarify, folks who are listening who may actually are local to where we are, may actually want to go. The pinball, the video games, and the board games are in separate halls. You're not playing board games and you're hearing the constant chirp of all the pinball machines. And it was actually very, very not loud, but it was very a buzz and exciting and lighted up in that room. So
I loved it because there was, you know, we would play a game. We would play a game and we would sit down, play an hour and a half game, and then I would just go. I'd be like, "Hey, Josiah, let's go play pinball." you know? And so it was really cool because there was so much diversity with what you were doing and what you had access to that you never got bored. You know, I never found myself saying, well, what do I do now? Or I'm not really sure what I should play. Yeah. There was always something to do.
And there were tournaments, I believe. There were tournaments going on of Wii tournaments and Switch tournaments and things like that. And
Josiah went into the console room, didn't you? Tell us about the console room.
It was fun. It was more like, I guess, like Atari and stuff more than really
classic games.
You know, newer type. Yeah, yeah. They had a few PS4s and Xboxes, but it was mostly stuff.
And we found a couple arcade machines that were running PS4s inside the arcade machine.
Street Fighter 5
and Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
We played original Teenage Ninja Turtles arcade.
Oh, yeah. That was remember? Fun.
That was really awesome. So Josiah.
Yeah, Josiah beat me in racing.
Oh, geez.
We did a lot of flexing to try to be like Hobbs
I think we
Shaw.
Have a video of that, too. I don't know if Rick was putting something together or not. But
Rick needs to put something together because he looks like a real fool.
It'll hopefully be ready when this episode releases. It'll hopefully be posted.
Okay, cool.
But we were a bit ridiculous for a little while at the expo.
Yeah.
There was a.
So, Josiah, what was your favorite part of the expo? Like that? What's your favorite memory? This is the thing you're saying. I'm going to tell some friends at school, and I'm going to make sure I go back next year. What is that thing?
Well, I think it is the pinball, because I just really enjoyed it. And I did like the board games a lot, but
What was your favorite pinball machine?
Probably the Deadpool. Yeah.
Deadpool is such a good one. Deadpool, I would say Deadpool was my number one pinball machine, and then number two would be the Batman 60s TV show. Yeah. Ooh, such a good one. Good.
Josiah, your favorite thing wasn't getting to hang out with me for the whole weekend?
that was my second favorite.
Yes, oh, there you go. I knew it.
Time with Bomb, second favorite.
Right. Well, and they had a ton of stuff that, like beyond even the things that we've talked about, I mean, they had some vendors there if you're wanting to buy stuff. Like they had a wrestling match.
Oh yes,
there,
that's right. There was a live full ring wrestling match.
Yes.
Oh, and let's not forget about the '80s prom.
No,
there was '80s prom going on as well.
Yep. '80s prom was Saturday night after the wrestling, and then they had people walking around in their best. 80s high school gear, mullets in full swing. So it was really cool. Like, it is a nerd fest over there, and it is beautiful.
But it's not, I think it's, to me, a more approachable nerd fest than, like, a Dragon Con or MomoCon. Like, there's not really a lot of cosplay.
Yeah.
There's not, like, it's less intimidating. Like, I think... Like, I could take my wife to that, and I think she would have a good time. So, and I don't know that I feel that way about all the gaming conventions we go to.
You went to MomoCon this year, and you went to Southern Fried, like, within weeks of each other. So, so you would definitely say, hey, Sarah, let's take the family here versus going to MomoCon.
Yeah, I mean, I think MomoCon is more about like, nerd culture and, like... celebrating with other people who love the nerdy things that you love. I think this is, I mean, I guess this is the same thing too, except you're actually getting to do those things instead of just talk about them. Like, there were people that were just, you know, they would rotate from pinball machine to pinball machine. But I think what I like about it is, like, I could play board games all day, and I have played board games all day at conventions like this. But, like, I couldn't go probably to an arcade and pinball convention and be satisfied all day. I think I would get bored.
Yeah.
And so I think this allows for people with different backgrounds to like go do stuff. And then like if you want to take a break, walk away and try something else, you can. And then you can go back to whatever it is you were enjoying. So I think it's a really great opportunity for people with different interests to kind of hang out.
Yeah. That's totally cool. So
the other part we haven't mentioned, Josiah, was I don't know if you and I ever fought each other in it, but what was it? Shout ball? Is that what it was called?
Oh, yeah. When you sing into it and then the ball like raises or lowers.
Yeah, it's like your whatever sound wave you make, you have to hit a certain note, and it will like extend out the sound wave. It's like soccer, or maybe more like foosball, and your sound wave knocks the ball back and forth. I got beat by like a 6 year old,
like kid.
I got beat down, like he destroyed me.
That's usually how it happens.
But no, I mean it's fun. It's fun. I had a great time.
Cool. All right, Josiah, out of 10, what are you giving this convention? One to 10. One is you attending a convention in a bathroom of a old Chevron in the country, and you had to get the keys.
And it's about
you had
staplers.
To get the keys. You had to get the keys from somebody at the front
and
desk.
It's
and there
hooked
was no
to a
toilet
giant
paper.
Like 2x4 that you have to like drag.
2x4. Yeah. So that's the number one. Number 10
and
is
10
the
is
greatest
the
convention
of that.
Ever.
So,
what you got?
I think like 8 3/4.
Yes.
There
that's
I go.
A good number.
There you go. 8 3/4. That's good. That's good.
Does that mean you want to go back next year?
Yeah, you're going back next year, aren't you?
Yes. Definitely.
Okay, cool. I think the rest of the family was a little jealous, so yeah. If our time permits, we may all go back next year because it was
oh,
stupid
nice.
Fun.
Yeah.
So. All right, that was Southern Fried Gaming Expo. Next up, we are going to talk about the games that we loved playing at SFGE. So we'll be back in just a minute. All right, guys, we are back. And Josiah's dropped off the podcast for a moment while we finish up the games that we enjoyed most at Southern Fried Gaming Expo. We played a lot of games. I played probably 15 games or so. Played some prototypes, played some stuff that's on Kickstarter, played some classic games. But these are 6 or 7 of the games that really, like, man, we loved it. We just love playing these. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, Rick, what you got? You want to talk about one?
What do I have? I get to go first now?
Yeah, you go first.
I was so unready. let's see.
We can go first.
You know what? I can talk about Conflicting
okay.
Legends.
Yes.
Conflicting Legends is a game that we got a copy of to demo at Southern Fried, and it is one that when you look at the box and when I read the title, at first I was kind of hesitant. It's not something that immediately got me excited, but... It's a game where if you take rock, paper, scissors and involve it in world domination, that's kind of what Conflicting Legends is. And you might say, that sounds stupid. Well, I think that's what most people think as they're playing it. And even when I describe the rules, like, and it takes a couple of rounds before people get excited about it. But once you hit that, basically what's happening is you're playing... different cards that feature people from history, and you're trying to get different resources that allow you to conquer territories, trying to get 10 stars worth of territory. But the main mechanic involves attacking opponents to try to steal their territory or weaken it. And that attack is resolved through rock, paper, scissors. But these aren't regular rock, paper, scissors. Basically, each round, kind of, the rules change a little bit. So, like, it might be that if somebody throws rock, they... lose a card, so therefore there's some they might be limited in how they want to play the game. My favorite are when people go with you're going head to head and you're both playing with two hands.
Yeah, the two hand resolvement is something I've never seen before. I don't know if that's a regular rock paper scissors thing, but I've never seen that before. So I don't know if the Conflicting Legends is the first to ever do that, but. As far as I'm concerned, and as far as rock, paper, scissors is concerned, it's absolutely genius.
Yes. And then you have some where it's one person versus the
yes.
rest of the table.
Yes.
It's a lot of fun, and by a few battles in, you start to really get into the rock, paper, scissors. You got people like Bob that will overthink their rock,
completely.
Paper, scissors, and it's so
completely.
Entertaining. It's a really solid game, and I had a bunch of people walk away. Each time we played the game, a bunch of people walk away and say, that was a lot more fun than
actually,
I thought
it was
going to be.
Actually, there was one guy
every
who
time
sat down
I've
and played
it.
With us. It was him and his son. And he said that was the most fun he had all weekend. Yes, that was really cool.
That's
yeah, we got
really
to play
cool.
with Tony, who was on an episode of Will It Game not too long ago. He joined yep. us and had a great time with us. Yeah, it's and it plays up to six people, and it you know, the it really kind of scales well. The game doesn't really change all that much from I think it's just a lot more fun once you need to probably have at least four, because otherwise it kind of can feel like there's not enough people to attack. But 4 to 6, it's really good.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, we had a fun time.
Talking about throwing hands, not
yep,
in fights.
Yep, that's what we're talking about.
We're talking about throwing hands.
That seemed
hands.
To be like a theme at SFGE that we get,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, we love
throwing hands.
Hands,
man.
Yeah, SFGE.
Because I know exactly hands. What you're about to talk about right now.
Yeah, I'm talking about
finger guns,
punching people in faces. People no, finger guns, finger guns at high noon.
Yeah, that was an offshoot of the room.
Throwing
there
hands.
Was one room that had a fight club.
There was a fight club in the basement of Southern Fried. So finger guns at high noon, man, this was super yes. fun. This is from Indie Boards and Cards. Also, this was a rock, paper, scissors style game. What you do, actually, all if you look in the show notes, just look right there. Go ahead and pick up that phone. Look
yeah,
at that
unless
phone.
You're driving.
You see it? Yeah,
in which
that's
case,
the link.
Stop in the middle of traffic and look at it.
Yeah, look at that link. You can click on that link right now, and what you'll do is you'll see a review from yeah. Bob. Finger Guns at High Noon has everybody playing by throwing their hands. They can throw to gain health. They can throw to posse up and join a team to defeat somebody, other people at the table. They can just straight up shoot somebody with their finger guns. You can power shot somebody, which is taking away 6 health from them, or you can choose to detonate some dynamite, which hits the people on the sides of you sitting in the circle. This is a really fun party game. Like, I can't say enough about it. This was one that when I demoed it at Origins, man, I felt so bad for the dude. I think he was just so tired that he couldn't function. And the guy did the worst job of making this look like a decent game. And then it was terrible, man. I wasn't scared.
With you guys when you...
No, I went up to this guy. There were 3 of us, and he was trying to teach the game, and it was brutal. I sat there, and I was like, I have to teach this game at Southern Fried in a couple weeks. I am not looking forward to it.
Was it at the Stronghold booth?
It was at the Stronghold booth.
Yeah, I think I saw
it,
but I didn't stop by.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It was so bad. But when I taught this game to families, people were so pumped. It was one of the coolest things to have first families that sat down to play this game later came back to me 3 hours later. We're sitting there playing another game, completely different game. And I think we were playing Tiny Towns or something. They came up to me. They said, hey, just a heads up, we can't find this game anywhere. Because there were vendors at the at Southern Fried. And I said, yeah, this is actually not... It's actually out now. It came out last week, and you can get it online, but it's not really in stores yet, but it's coming. And this was a copy that they gave me to demo. Indie Boards and Cards sent me a copy to demo here at Southern Fried. And they were like, oh, can we buy that copy? I said, no, I can't sell you a copy that was given to me. I can't do that. And so, and I've got to also teach it the rest of the weekend. So we ended up playing probably 5 games of finger guns throughout the weekend. And then since we've been home, I've played finger guns at least another 6 or 7 times.
Oh, yeah.
Every time we have a group of 5 or more people, finger guns is on the
table.
Same
here.
I played it.
Same here.
So Bob,
Friday
Bob
night,
has,
I played it again. It was so much fun.
Bob, as a player of both games, like which is your favorite and why?
Man, okay, so conflicting legends and finger guns. While they are both about throwing hands, conflicting legends has more strategy to it. Because you're trying to go after single people, and you have time to study your turn and to play a card, figure out what people have the best countries that you need to destroy, and then actually use cards to attack them. Plus, there's resource gathering. Finger guns is all out ridiculous craziness, like chaos. So I think they're two different ones. There's a time for conflicting legends. So if I had to say,
so it's like conflicting legends is that party game that you play for people that hate party games that are like, I want strategy. Yes. I want to be serious. And you can get them hooked because there is the strategic part, but you're also, you're playing rock, paper, scissors.
So conflicting legends, if I had to put a game in, I had to break down a game night, and let's say I had six people over, okay? And I had to break down a game night. Conflicting legends belongs at the beginning to right after the beginning, towards right before the end. Those are the places where you have conflicting legends. Finger guns is at the very beginning, or at the very, very end. So you have the meat in the middle. I would say finger guns is an appetizer or a dessert. If I was going to equate it in like a food thing, as John Stocky. So if I was going to do that, so they both have their place at the table. I don't know that I can actually say that I enjoy one more than the other right now. I would need some more play testing time. Plus, I don't have a copy of Conflicting Legends yet, so I haven't introduced my play group to it. But my play group has been introduced to Finger Guns, and the next time that they had them over, I had them over the following week, the first thing they did when they came in, they all said, Finger Guns? Finger Guns? And they all wanted to play it. Because when I was explaining this game, and I think Ryan mentioned this too, when I was explaining this game, or maybe it was you mentioning it about Conflicting Legends, they all kind of looked at me like, okay, we'll give it, you know, all right, let's do this. But man, like three minutes into the game, everybody is just, it's like complete chaos. Everybody's laughing. Everybody's just, I mean, it was, I don't really know how to explain the game other than just constant like laughter and tension, you know? So like everybody starts with 20 health. And from that point on, once the game starts, if somebody calls out 3-2-1 draw, you better have your gun ready and you better be pointing it at somebody, you know?
Yeah. You only get caught not pointing at somebody one time. That one time you're like, I'm a stupid idiot. I didn't have my hand ready.
It whatever. Happens.
That only happens one time, and then you're ready for the rest of the game.
It causes you to not be able to. It depended on the groups too. So I've played with a couple of groups that are like in between somebody calling 3-2-1 draw. They want to talk for like 20 seconds, and people are apprehensive. Yeah. Like, am I supposed to call it? Are you gonna say it? Is this person about to say it?
Yeah.
So in the meantime, when people are waiting for people to say it, there is a little bit of deliberation going on, and I see some sneaky winking and a little thumbs up gesture behind the table or under the table behind someone's back.
That. Yeah, sneaky winking is the name of my book.
Sneaky winking. So it does happen, but then there are the groups where okay, we're ready to go. 3-2-1 draw, and you better have your gun ready. You know, and you can't, and sometimes you can't think about it. You just throw that gun up, and whoever you decided to point at, you know. So it adds a super amount of chaos into it, but it's like fun chaos, especially since John Velgus decided to put. I love that he put no player elimination into this.
Yeah, it's a really
good
decision.
Nobody gets kicked out of the game. You just go to a different team. You go to the dead team. you become a ghost. And then you're trying to win collectively as the ghosts as opposed to winning as a survivor. Nice. So
in order to get through this list, we're going to go a little faster because I know Rick is going to try to go to bed because he actually has to go to work. Oh, no, Rick's got to go back to work.
Bedtime.
He's had the whole summer doing nothing.
No, I'm just
playing.
Yeah, leave me alone.
I'm just playing.
Well, I could talk about Swordcrafters.
Yeah, talk about Swordcrafters. You and Josiah played.
Yeah, so basically, it's kind of a set collection game, plus a tear and share. What is the name of that officially? Like New York Slice? A sharing mechanic, I guess. But basically, you've got a hilt, and there are a set number of sword pieces that are laid out each round, and they're split by the players, and then each player takes a set and adds those to their sword. You get points if you put the sword pieces, like if you match up you know, you've got a bunch of reds in a row on one side because your sword is three-dimensional. You're building it up, and it's got four sides of it, and it basically becomes this big, long rectangle. And you get points for different things. There's also some victory condition cards that you get that'll get you bonus points. It's really cool. It's one that I think the mechanics are good, but mostly the game is sold by the fact that you're building a sword. Like, that's what's cool about it. And at the end of the game, you have this, you know, thing that you've built, and you're definitely going to swing it at each other. And yeah, it's really fun. I think not going to be groundbreaking, not change your life, but it probably would especially work if you've got younger players. If you can prevent them from breaking it over each other's heads, I think it's just the idea that you're building a sword will work well.
Yeah, I think the table presence for this one's interesting because you see these people sitting. When I was watching you guys play it, I kept checking in because I think I was teaching a game of finger guns, and I looked over and I see you and Josiah building these really awesome looking swords. It's just a really cool mechanic and really cool process to see. So,
and while we played it, the people next to us were playing a Rick and Morty game, and it was very confusing for me the entire time.
That's funny.
Because they kept saying my name, and I was like, I don't know you people.
Stop talking to me!
Leave me alone! So, trying to build a sword here!
So, Bob, you brought Silver and Gold. This was a game that we actually played before we got over to Southern Fried. We got to play Silver and Gold at Titans Games in Atlanta, which is one of our favorite game shops. We stopped in there to see what they had going on and just hang out for a little bit before we got to Southern Fried, before it started. And so Silver and Gold is a really cool flipping right game.
Yep.
Excellent mechanics. You write on the cards. You're trying to dig through the most treasure, I guess.
You're trying to complete the most maps. So you're getting a couple of treasure maps in front of you. And one of the coolest things about this game is that it is a flip and write. And it comes with, what do you call those markers? The Expo markers. Dry erase. Really cool dry erase markers, and you actually write on the playing cards. So it has a UV coating, and you can actually write on these maps, and they wipe right off when you're done. It's very cool. But again, this is a card game I got from over in Germany. It is by the great Phil Walker Harding, Baron Park, Sushi Go, Emotep, you know that Phil Walker Harding. This is a really fun flip and write game where you're trying to bring out a deck of 8 polyominoes, also another 2019 theme, and you're flipping out these shapes one shape at a time. You're writing the shape on a couple of maps that you have. You're picking one of them and making that shape on the boards, and then once the deck passes and somebody else pulls out a shape, so you're going to see these 7 shapes out of the 8, and that's what ends the round. There are 4 rounds, and you are trying to best fill out your maps as fast as you can by seeing 7 shapes, 4 rounds, 28 polyominoes in all. You need to fill out as many maps as you can because they are worth different victory points for each type of map. There's some extra iconography in there with some extra point gathering with coins on the maps. There's palm tree scoring. There's palm trees on the maps. Yeah. It's a really cool game. It's not available, like I said, in the U.S. right now, but Pandasaurus.
It's coming,
Pandasaurus just picked it up. They announced it at Gen Con. I think I knew about it before that, but announced it at Gen Con.
Fancy.
And Pandasaurus will be bringing it over here for official U.S. release. So
this is going to be a great game that you can just look for in probably Target and things like that, because this is going to be probably a big box store game.
Silver and Gold. It's really
fun. Silver and Gold's really good. So I'm really looking forward to getting that. Skull King, give you a quick synopsis, a trick-taking game with a lot. Yeah, trick-taking game that has a lot of back and forth. There are pirates, and there are traditional cards, and there are mermaids that beat the pirates, and there's all this really cool stuff. Skull King is a very complicated trick-taking game where you are trying to You're basically saying how many sets you're going to make. If you are looking for a deep trick-taking game, Skull King is where you need to go. It is very
It's a combination of euchre and spades smashed together, or up and down the road, I think it's called. So you have 10 rounds. You get one card in the first round, two cards in the second round, three cards in the third round, all the way up until 10 cards in the 10th round. And you're calling your books, but unlike spades, and you're working by yourself, and everyone is calling their books at the same time. So it's like a 1-2 or a yo-ho shoot, and then everybody throws out a number, and you have to lead. Whoever's leading is going to lead. You have to follow suit, just like in spades. But you have to hit your books on the head. So if call two books, you better make two books. If you call zero or nil, you better not win any books, and so forth. And you're going to get victory points from doing that. But in all honesty, I got to thank Isaac from Gaming with Sidekicks, because he introduced this game to me at Origins. And this is the most played game since I've left Origins.
Yes.
It's the best trick-taking game I have ever played. It is, not because of the mechanics that it uses and the extra abilities with the Skull King itself and the mermaids and the Kraken, the card that cancels a trick and everything, but it's just because it's so accessible. And it's very easily taught. It's a very small amount of table space, so it's something easy I can throw in my pocket, or I can throw in my wife's purse and take it with me everywhere. It is just an absolutely wonderful trick-taking game. If you like trick-taking and you like card games, I 130% recommend that you get this game.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, I think with trick-taking, it becomes one of those where it's so simple that a lot of people will ignore it. Like, people that are gamers don't play a lot of spades, I find, because they're like, I need something more complex or with more components. I think it did really well. We did learn that if you've never played a trick-taking game before, that it can be hard to learn. As I think, if we asked Josiah his low light of the convention, he might have said it was Skull Kings.
Yeah.
Also, I destroyed you guys in it, so that was really fun.
He was not. I think it was too deep of a trick taking game for him to enjoy.
It was also like 11 o'clock at night.
It was I think it was maybe later. Remember, we were playing games till 3 o'clock.
We stayed up until 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning that night. We got pizza. We ordered pizza to the hotel, to the gaming hall at like midnight. So.
Yeah, it was not good pizza.
It was horrible pizza.
Res Arcana, this is the last one on our list. Bob, can you give us a 10-second elevator pitch for Res Arcana?
Res Arcana, Tom Lehman, Favor of the Pharaoh, what is it? Ryan. Roll for the Galaxy, Race for the Galaxy, Favor of the Pharaoh. That's Tom Lehman. This is Res Arcana. It's an awesome engine builder. The theme, I will say the theme is kind of pasted on, but the artwork is really cool. But it is just at its base, it is a pure, strict engine builder. You're playing cards.
That's cool.
You're tapping. I don't know if I can say that. Can I say that? Tapping, exhausting.
Yeah, sure.
Exhausting, turning.
Exhausting.
You're turning cards to gather resources and spend resources to get more resources to buy more cards. And it's super, super engine buildery. And what you're doing is you're gathering resources to eventually get these cards that offer you victory points, and these conditions, these win conditions that are in the game on big, nice cardboard square pieces that say you can take this with this many resources, and then you can take this many resources and turn them in this many times for this many victory points. It's just all about the synergy of the cards that you get and the resources that you're making. Like I said, there's not a whole lot of theme to it. It is a fantasy theme. So it's like dragons and swords and fantasy and fire and things like that. But it's a very thinky engine builder, and I like thinky engine builders. So I like Tom Lehman, and I love Roll for the Galaxy series. So it's an absolute hit for me. I love it. It was immediate buy. That's cool. It was immediate buy for me.
Very cool. Well, those were the games that stood out to us at Southern Fried Gaming Expo. We are going to be going back there next year. I'm very excited. I will tell you, this was definitely an experience I want to have over and over again. So if you want any more info on Southern Fried Gaming Expo, you can go to the link in the show notes, go to their website, find out more as they plan out their 2020 convention. Yeah. So,
and hey, you know what? You guys Google it. You know how to use the internet. Yeah. Come on.
You just use the internet. I mean, how many times do
I
have to tell you?
I can guarantee you it's going to be bigger next year.
Yeah. So be sure to find us. You also use the internet. Find us at oneboardfamily.com. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Follow us on all the socials at oneboardfamily. And that'll do it.
So let's end the show with our NBA champions here. John Stockton, if you'll provide the assist.
We'll see you
at the table.
Yeah, Karl Malone.
Punchboard Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.
We'll see you
at the table.
No, I screwed.
Yeah, you did. Leave all this in here too.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I'll say, see you, Karl Malone.
Jeez.
Yeah, you got to give him the assist. You got to do
say
the alley-oop.
I'll say John Stockton to Karl Malone.
Okay.
John Stockton sets up Karl Malone.
All right, Bob, I'm going to need my assist, Mr. Stockton. Until next time, we will
see you.
Rick.
At the table.
No,
I'm not
Karl
Malone. I don't do the dunk.
You're
what's happening?
Malone, Ryan.
You're Karl Malone.
I'm supposed to throw you the assist.
I don't even know a third. I don't even know a third person from the Jazz that I'm supposed to be.
Is this not a three-way alley-oop?
It's John Stockton to Karl Malone.
Oh, we're not the Globetrotters.
Throw it to John Stockton, and I'll say, we'll see you. Right. Yeah. Say, this is Karl Malone, and this is how we end the show.
Actually, if you don't use that take, I'm going to be really disappointed, but go for it.
Okay. All right, so this is how we do an assist, Mr. John Stockton. Until next time, we'll see you.
No! No!
Oh, jeez.
I'm supposed to assist you. I am John Stockton. Okay. I throw Karl Malone the ball.
Got it. All right.
So,
all right.
So hold on.
Ready?
So, say.
Okay.
How about I'll do it. I'll start it off.
Okay.
Okay.